Welcome to the newest episode of FieroCast. Tonight, we are going to dive into the Fisher Body Pontiac Assembly Plant, or what we all know it as, the birthplace of the Pontiac Fiero. But before we jump into that, we just want to mention again that FieroCast has been awarded 3 podcast awards over the course of the last couple of years. FieroCast has been awarded the Automotive Award for Best Iconic American Car Brand for the Enthusiast Club in Illinois, Best Automotive Podcast in 2024, as well as Most Informative Automotive Podcast in 2024, all from the Business Concepts, Corporate Visions, and Innovative in Business. And just wanted to let you know as well that FieroCast is a production of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiast, which is in an incorporated business within the state of Illinois. So thank you to all our listeners, as we have hit 50 episodes and more are coming. I got a great list. We had put a post out on Facebook, and we took a poll at the last NIFE meeting, and I got a great list of Fiero, future Fiero casts. I think I got about 10 plus. So thank you guys for sending in ideas. If it is something where I will contact you and we can set up a FieroCast recording, and we can talk to you about what your idea was and what your thought process was on your part and stuff of getting into the Fiero. So check us out. We do have an episode coming up. We will dive into the Jim Gilbert Memorial event that is held out on the East Coast. But otherwise, again, thank you to the Fiero community for your support and listening to FieroCast. It has been a pleasure producing each and every episode for you. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and you are listening to the newest episode of FieroCast, the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. You can find past FieroCast episodes at FieroFocus.com, on our Facebook page, as well as our YouTube page. We would like to thank you for your support again for this new 2025 season. We could not do it without you, the Fiero community, but also our supporters for our 2025 season, which include the Fiero Store, Rodney Dickman, Bonter Solutions, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, GoldenEye Graphic, the NIFE Store, the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts, and Auto Modella. So thank you again for all your support. This episode is brought to you by the Fiero Store and the Midwest Fiero Clubs. We know how hard it is to find Fiero parts. We also know that as years go by, finding parts isn't going to get any easier. The big box stores will never make new Fiero parts because our community is just too small. This is why we needed to support the companies that support us. For nearly 30 years, the Fiero Store has sponsored our club events, provided free technical support, and produced well over 150 exclusive parts that no big box store would even consider. So, next time you need Fiero parts, head over to thefierostore.com. and browse through thousands of products that are specifically designed for your Fiero. That's FieroStore.com, the world's largest source of Fiero parts. Have you asked yourself, what is the Midwest Fiero Clubs? Well, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, which is also a region of the AACA, is a dedicated group of enthusiasts whose passion is to promote and preserve the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. The Midwest Fiero Clubs consists of members from existing Fiero clubs across the U.S. The Midwest Fiero Club's intent is to support member clubs and promote the Fiero-related events that they offer. The intent is to enable enthusiasts to discover events in their areas other than their own and to warrant participation. This has created a tighter-knit Fiero community of the owners and
created some great regional shows that may not have otherwise happened. So, how do I find out about them? You can visit the website at midwestfieroclubs.aaca.com or just Facebook them at Midwest Fiero Clubs AACA and like them.
All right. Thank you again to our supporters for this episode, as well as our 2025 supporters. As you know, we do like to make sure that all the Fiero industry representatives and vendors out there do get their spotlight and support throughout all of the Fiero community. All right, so let's dive into the Fisher Body Pontiac Assembly Plant, which again we all know as the birthplace of the Fiero. So the Fisher Body was, going back years, was an automotive coach builder for an era when the transition from horse-drawn wagons to automobiles was taking place. Initially, the skills used to build wooden and metal bodies for vehicles was very, so specialized and specific that most automobile manufacturers procured contracts with existing coach builders to produce bodies for the running chassis of their autos. So as the automobile industry began to grow, many manufacturers began producing vehicle bodies in-house, and coach-built bodies became a practice regulated to expense vehicles. The advent of the unibody construction made custom coach building impossible for automobiles. So the Fiero has two connections with coach building. Fisher Body was founded by the Fisher brothers in 1908 in Detroit, Michigan, the same year that General Motors was founded. The company's beginning can be traced all the way back to the horse-drawn carriage shops in Norwalk, Ohio. And in 1904 and 1905, Fred and Charles, the two eldest brothers of 11 Fisher children, came to Detroit with their uncle Albert Fisher, who had established the Standard Wagon Works during the latter part of the 1880s. And Fred and Charles found work at the C.R. Wilson Company, which was a manufacturer of the horse-drawn carriage bodies that had began to fabricate bodies for automobile manufacturers. So prior to forming Fisher Body, Fred Fisher had built the body for the Cadillac Acela, at the C.R. Wilson Company. The Acela, which was designed by Henry Martin Leland, the founder of Cadillac, is credited as being the industry's first concept car and the first fully enclosed car. Starting in 1910, Fisher became and started supplying the parts to the industry's first concept car. And first, it was starting in 1910, Fisher became the supplier of all closed bodies for Cadillac and Buick. He also supplied bodies for Ford and Studebaker automobiles as well. But Fisher Body had their operations in Pontiac, Michigan, and began in 1922 with the purchase of the O.J. Benoit Body Company, which was located in Wesson and Walnut Streets. At that time, Fisher Body produced wooden and metal body parts for Chevrolet and the Oakland Motor Car Company. Not until 1925, which saw the completion of the plant at Baldwin and Connecticut Streets to supply bodies for Oakland. Then, a year later, General Motors constructed a plant adjacent to the Fisher Body plant to produce the Pontiac car as part of the Oakland line. And it formed a 1/4 mile long conveyor, which was constructed between the two plants to transport the bodies. And then in 1919, a deal was struck by General Motors President William Durant. And General Motors bought 60% of the Fisher body before integrating it entirely as an in-house coach building division in the 1926 year. So Fisher body then brought many of the innovations to the industry, including the canted windshields, no draft ventilation, one-piece steel roofs, dual windshield wipers, side impact beams, the ignition interlock, airbags, which they came up with in 1974, and all the metric automobile Chevrolet Chevette. Fisher body was unfortunately dissolved by being merged with other GM operations in 1984. Yet, at the time, GM still referred to its plants that were originally Fisher body plants by their Fisher body designation. The plant at which the Fiero was brought to life, which is located at 900 Baldwin Avenue in Pontiac, Michigan, is the Fisher body Pontiac assembly plant. Now, General Motors in the early history included Buick, Cadillac, LaSalle, Oldsmobile, Oakland, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Elwing, Marquardt, Scripps Booth, Sheridan, Elmore, and Rapid and Reliance trucks. In the aftermath of the Great Depression, only seven makes existed with GM. That was Buick, Cadillac, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Oldsmobile, Oakland, and LaSalle. But by 1931, production of the Oakland had decreased significantly, and it led to the demise of the Oakland name. The Oakland V8 series would become the last Oakland in 1932, leaving its companion make, the Pontiac, which began life 6 years earlier, to carry that on. Soon after the introduction of Pontiac in 1926, it became evident that the original factory site near the center of the city of Pontiac was too small. So they looked at a 246-acre plot of land and acquired on the northern edge of the city to build a new plant. Now, this new $15 million plant was completed in 1935. Now, $15 million back then is a whole hell of a lot more nowadays. So if they had that much money back then, you're probably talking about a plant that would be worth, you know, billions to make now. But the new facility was known as the Daylight Plant because of the extensive use of large window areas and glass skylights that provided natural illumination. The building's design was likely influenced by the concept of the new objectivity within the modern movement that was taking place in mostly German speaking Europe and promoted by Bauhaus. The concept was to break down the barriers between art and crafts by the elite through simplified forms, rationality and functionality, and the idea of mass production was within the individual artistic spirit. So GM was definitely involved with mass production, but they also were able to bring the market cars with modern proportions that combined art and science. And then they basically showed the luxury car market, which were still coach built and which GM executives resented, but that car design was moving forward and GM was leading that movement. The attitude carried over into GM's buildings. In architecture, the concept was translated into the use of glass surfaces and geometric compositions. Since the plant would be the newest automobile manufacturing facility in existence, other modern elements were implemented, such as this factory, along with the Fisher Body No. 1, located in Flint, Michigan, were the only Fisher plants to have three major components of body construction: metal fabrication, soft trim fabrication, and body assembly, which they had all located under one roof. Now, One such feature was an overpass constructed to transport automobile bodies from the Fisher Body Plant to the Pontiac Assembly Plant on the conveyor that was protected from the weather. This was a luxury most other cart manufacturers did not have, as they had to transport their vehicle bodies by truck, and it was considered a miracle in the construction industry that within 90 days of the groundbreaking, that cars were being produced in a new plant. But prior to World War II, Pontiac built the bodies for the Deluxe 6s and 8s, Master 6s, and the Streamliner Torpedo 6s, as well as the 8s at the Baldwin Fisher Body Plant. But now, during World War II, the plant, like most of the other auto industry plants, was utilized for war production. Alfred P. Sloan Jr. wrote in his book, My Years with General Motors, which between February 1942 and September of 1945, we did not make a single passenger car in the United States. Our assignment was to transform the world's largest automobile company into the world's largest manufacturing of materials for war. Although some of the torpedoes and streamline chieftains were built in early 1942, the plant was stripped of all commercial production and equipment and converted to defense product and production manufacturing. The Fisher Body Plant then started producing parts for the M10, the M4, the M36, the M24, the M18, and the M8 tanks. Aircraft parts and assemblies like the 90mm anti-aircraft gun mounts, the 5-inch naval guns, parts for the 120mm and 155mm guns, rocket bomb parts, torquematic transmission parts, combat vehicle parts, diesel engines, machine tool parts. This was what the plant became. And they began to build gun mounts back starting in February of 1942 and was prepared to produce the guns at an unprecedented rate of 900 per month. But the Army reduced the production schedule. The guns went into production 5 months ahead of schedule. The first finished product was shipped in June of 42, only 4 months after, you know, work began, and approximately 3 months before the Army expected delivery. The Fisher Body had produced 2,359 guns before the contract was terminated, and they began working on the next gun production contract. But in 1945, the plant was awarded the Army Navy E for its contribution to the defense effort for the war. And as the war went on and after World War II, a vast expansion program was launched to increase automobile production now and the capacity by increasing it by 50% to satisfy the growing demand for cars. So Pontiac's own foundry was greatly enlarged, but the layout of the engine plant was altered to provide more machines and increase production. A new building was then erected for increased production for rear axles and for heat treating of steel forging to make them tougher and more durable. Pontiac's electroplating system, one of the largest automatic processes in the new warehouse, was put into service. And this included for the torpedoes, and the streamliners were again built immediately after the war. The chieftains was added in 1949. So as everything was moving along and 1950 started, as part of Pontiac's extensive enlargement and modification program, a new car finishing building was needed and was completed, and the engine plant was completely modernized to produce the 1955 V8 engine in record volumes. Now, this, a two-line assembly system, which incorporated the new Pontiac Tempest with the regular Pontiac styles, that was also created. The expansion now increased capacity from 55 to 75 jobs per hour, And by 1965, the capacity increased to 80 jobs per hour. So as things kept growing, Pontiac continued its dominance of third place during the 1960s as sales records were shattered. Now, the division also moved ahead in plant construction, and by 1964, three new projects had been announced. All were completed the following year and added some 1.5 million square feet to Pontiac's home production facilities. Now, these included a 180,000 square foot addition to the foundry for new core making machines, water cooler, and a new finishing room to make Pontiac's foundry the most modern in the industry. So they also added was the service parts warehouse containing over 1 million square feet under one roof to consolidate storage for service parts. Now, this one-story storage and shipping building, which is 800 feet long and 330 feet wide, was able to expedite shipments to other Pontiac assembly plants, and that building was completed in 1964. But from 1961 through 1983, the A, B, and G bodies, which are the Le Mans, the Bonneville, and Grand Prix bodies, had and were trim were all built in that original Fisher body plant. As we move a few years forward, by 1974, all major construction had been completed on a multi-million dollar program to clean up smoke emissions from the Pontiac casting plant. Five modern arc melt furnaces and four electric induction molding furnaces with the latest dust collecting units were installed. The two remaining coke-fired cupolas and modern emission control equipment installed, making them as clean as electric furnaces. Now, again, this is back in the 1970s. And in the 1970s, the economy took, as most of our older generation know, a downward slant, resulting in the escalating inflation rate that was made more complex by the 1973 and 1979 oil shortages. But GM, like many other auto manufacturers, had spent the decade learning a different lesson and trying to catch up in the trend for fuel-efficient vehicles. So a group of engineers led by our founding father, the Fiero Halke Okadeke, the father of the Fiero and the chief engineer of the program, proposed a small two-place mid-engine commuter car. It was initially suggested on the basis that it would be able to achieve 50 miles per gallon. Now, that was the type of vehicle that GM needed. So, in June of 1979, when GM's president, Pete Estes, gave Bob Stemple permission to produce the Fiero project, Okadeke immediately went to Pontiac's home plant next to the Pontiac headquarters. And prior to getting the okay to proceed, and the decision of where to build the car included Bowling Green, Kentucky, alongside the Corvette, Fisher Body Plant 21 in Detroit, and even at an outside company in Illinois. But the Baldwin Avenue plant, which had been used to build a Grand Prix and the Bonneville bodies, was slated to be shut down because of the recent completion of Lake Orion. And the Michigan facility was coming online. So Halke realized that the Fisher Body Assembly plant would provide a facility that was necessary and was the right place for manufacturing and the assembly people already in place. And this plant consisted of Pontiac's home plant and the Fisher Body plant at the same site. So, the Fisher Body plant produced the bodies for Pontiac Motor Division and was later used for the Fiero assembly. But the conveyor that carried bodies to the final assembly in the plant was, prior to the program, was occupying the facility. So Halkey realized that he couldn't follow the then GM norm by designing a car, then simply passing it to manufacturing to decide how to build it. So he needed to work with manufacturing engineers to design the assembly process while simultaneously designing the car. But because this car was going to be built in a manner unlike anything that had come before it, the car's design began with Halkey putting together a team that included representatives from car assembly, Pontiac's pressed metal, reliability engineering, and service. Now, each representative was to be responsible for both the car's design and the car's manufacturer. Each member realized that they could not work in a bubble and then hand their interest in the car to another group. So this forced the manufacturing personnel to basically be design oriented and the car design personnel to be manufacturing oriented. So the team then realized that the Pontiac assembly plant was too big for their needs, but they also soon realized that the Fisher body portion of the facility would be the right size. So this, in essence, benefited the Fiero's program in a number of ways, including its proximity to Pontiac's administration and engineering, moving the Fiero schedule forward, and saving costs by building the Fiero in an existing facility. Now, due to its concept of using the Fisher body plant, making the entire team responsible for both design and manufacturing and building the car at an unprecedented low line rate, corporate was, skeptical of what was the main reason, being that the team was proposing doing everything themselves and having a program that made money despite turning out vehicles in a relatively small amount. So as the 1980s began, the entire auto industry at the time was suffering, and suddenly the Fiero program was in jeopardy by being canceled. So we knew it was being canceled later on in the late 80s, but this is, the possibility of in the early 1980s that it already being talked about being canceled. But the team continued to develop it no matter what. And by 1982, the economy had improved, as did sales of the Pontiac Grand Prix and the Bonneville. But at the time, still being built in, Pontiac assembly plant. So GM extended assembly of these two models, delaying the Fiero program by 6 months. And in August of 1982, General Motors closed its 47-year-old Pontiac plant, which during its lifetime produced almost 10 million Pontiac cars. And the plant, which had just over 1,300 hourly workers, was shut down to make way for the newer, more efficient facility. The Fisher body plant was also closed, idling some 2,200 workers, and the workers were to be provided jobs the following year. All this was occurring while the Fiero team was planning and utilizing the Fisher body plant and some of its workforce. So what happened? Well, one early design decision involved the car having a strong space frame, allowing manufacturing to develop the concept of installing the suspension, the cradle, and the wheels on the frame and rolling the cars around the plant as opposed to having them on conveyors. So tire and wheel assembly was done outside the plant and was supplied like all other parts components and assemblies using the just-in-time process to eliminate having an inventory of parts in the plant. And the Fisher Body plant was then gutted and completely renovated in a 6-month time frame to the specific specifications necessary for the Fiero's assembly process, which included 26 robots that produced 40% of the space frame welds and one mill and drill machine. And if anybody has seen this in images, I mean, this thing was a beast. The mill and drill machine could process 30 space frames per hour, which included the automatic changing of drill bits and taps without disrupting the rate. One other unique aspect of the Fiero assembly is the body panels rode along on parallel lines so that they stayed with the space frame onto which they would then eventually be installed. The one car assembly line included the chassis department, the body shop, paint shop, and trim department. Pontiac used alternative batching painting by colors so that at one time only red cars were produced, then black, then white, and so on. The Fiero pilot program began in January of 1983 in a plant that encompassed 57 acres or 1.8 million square feet of space. The Fisher body plant was refurbished to include four departments: the body shop, the chassis department, the paint shop, and the trim department. The paint shop utilized a wire-guided vehicle system consisting of a wire embedded in the floor. Now, the vehicles, not the cars, transported the plastic body panels from receiving to a second floor storage area. The vehicles did not require an operator and could respond to various commands transmitted through the 3,700 lineal feet of wire, including automatically detecting an obstruction in its path, automatic horn sounding, turn signals, route selection, and program stops. Each vehicle pulled three trailers. So to make the concept of building a new type of car with cooperation of all personnel involved in the process made it plannable. It was decreed that managers not wearing neckties, as ties were perceived to be a symbol of authority and a line of, you know, between supervisors and workers, meetings involving engineers and line workers took part in an effort to improve both the vehicle and the assembly process. Once production began, all personnel were empowered to halt production at a moment's notice if a deficient condition was identified. All of this was enacted to produce the best product possible and to keep the ever, you know, tenuous corporate backing of the Fiero program viable. And from June of 1979, from Pete Estes, then president of GM, gave the product the green light until the successful first year sales figures were accounted. The Fiero program was always in danger of being canceled, but the Fiero production continued for 4 model years. In March of 1988, GM announced that it would cease production of the Fiero and the plant would be idled. Since Pontiac knew the final date of the Fiero assembly and was using the just-in-time supply process, it is highly doubtful that any, you know, completed car was, you know, existed or parts were left in the plant on the final day. GM converted the plant into a warehouse and storage area in the late 1980s, and the whereabouts of the mill and drill machine are still unknown to this day. The prototypes and other materials then stored in the old Fisher body plant shifted to Warren, Michigan, as part of the GM's consolidation of the engineering-related functions at the refurbished tech center. There had been no automobile production at the plant since August of 1988, when the last Fiero rode gracefully through those doors and out into the parking lot for the final time. And in 1997, the plant would become a Michigan EPA Superfund cleanup site. The Fisher Body Plant still presents a tidy facade to the public traveling down Baldwin Avenue, except for the diminished activity around the plant. It would seem that it is still a viable manufacturing plant. Other newer GM buildings have been erected on the site between the Fisher Body Plant and the old Pontiac Motors headquarters building. The sign outside of the Fisher Body Plant now announces its official designation as Pontiac Manufacturing Center, Pontiac Warehouse Operations. Internally, it is referred to as Plant 17. And as many know, in the current time, since attending the 40th anniversary event in Pontiac, Michigan, the sign structure is still there, but the building is now gone. So the Fiero has two connections, looking back with the coach-built automobiles. The first is that it was built in the Fisher Body Plant that fabricated bodies for GM cars at the time when GM wasn't building its own bodies. The second is the Fiero. Unlike most passenger vehicles built since the 1930s, has a body that is supported all off the frame as opposed to being part of the car's structure. The realization of this concept became apparent when companies independent of General Motors began manufacturing bodies for the Fiero. In true coach-built fashion, you could start with the running chassis or the space frame and design and install infinite versions of bodies for the car. Thank you for listening to this newest episode of FieroCast. Fisher Body Pontiac Assembly, the birthplace of the Pontiac Fiero. This podcast was written by NIFE member Christopher Sass. Produced by GoldenEye Graphic, published through FieroFocus.com, and is a publication of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiast. Thank you for joining me tonight. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and thank you for listening to the award-winning and newest episode of FieroCast. This is episode 51, and it is the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. If you'd like more information or have any ideas on future FieroCast, you can email me at mkroyer@fierocast.com or mkroyer@fierofocus.com. Remember to keep fieroing, and good night, Fiero owners, wherever you are. Research for this article is from The 75 Years of Pontiac, The Official History by John Gunroll, Fiero Pontiac's Potent Mid-Engine Sports Car by Gary Witzenberg, Fisher Body Online, CarType.com, The Oakland Press. Special thanks to Pontiac historian Mr. John Sawruck, Mr. Jim Blaine of the UAW General Motors Department, and Mr. Roy Nagel.